This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us is our old friend Greg Palast, the investigative reporter for, geez, just about everybody. BBC, Rolling Stone, you name it. Puffin Foundation. Greg, welcome to the program.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
It is always great having you on the program with us. So what is Chris Kobach up to? They were meeting in New Hampshire yesterday. And the biggest question I have, I asked this of Congressman Pocan just a minute ago. Why is it that a commission that is looking into the integrity of our election system is not asking, are these voting machines hackable, particularly when you've got all these news reports about Russians and everybody else hacking into them?
Well, it's eyes wide shut. The real question is, why does a commission called the Elections Integrity Commission have people like Chris Kobach who have no integrity?
Yeah.
And I don't say that loosely. It's not just an epithet.
No, this is the guy who's the author of SB 1020.
He's a fibber. He just makes stuff up. Right. And so it was fascinating to see this gang of vote fraud hunters to tell you that there's massive vote fraud. And of course, people say it's ridiculous, it's stupid. The problem is that the joke's on us, because it may be foolish, because they're not finding these great, hordes of fraudulent voters, not arresting them. But they are using that as an excuse to change voting rules, and as they've done since 2006, when they began requiring ID in many states. And the purpose is simply to stop voters of color. And the color is blue, Democrat. Unfortunately, a lot of Democrats have gone along, including there is a Democrat on the panel, Bill Gardner.
Now, isn't that a good thing to have, some fox watching the chicken coop? It's a terrible metaphor. It's the wrong metaphor for this, but you understand what I'm saying.
Here's the great fraud hunter. So, where's the beef? Show us the stuff. So Bill Gardner, by the way, the one Democrat, he is the reason why they had the meeting in New Hampshire. Is he's from New Hampshire. And he's the guy that is the source of Kobach's claim that 6,000 people, and maybe many more from Massachusetts, voted in the New Hampshire president in the New Hampshire
election. Wait a minute, was a Democrat
election?
Who said that?
And yeah, and so here's the thing. And he said because they used Massachusetts driver's license to vote in New Hampshire. Now they know exactly who these people are. They have their names and addresses. But the incompetent Secretary of State of New Hampshire absolutely refuses to have them arrested. By the way, the incompetent Secretary of State of New Hampshire is Bill Gardner, the guy who made the accusation. He's accused 6,000 people or more of voting illegally in New Hampshire. He has their names, addresses, everything.
Now, I used to live in New Hampshire. New Hampshire has got a bunch of really good colleges. I mean, Dartmouth is in New Hampshire.
Say what? Did you vote there last week? Did you vote there in the 16?
Yeah, right.
Right.
No, I did not. But there's a bunch of colleges in New Hampshire, and to the best of my knowledge, if you go to college in New Hampshire, say you live in Indiana or Massachusetts or wherever, and you're going to college in New Hampshire, you're there 9 months out of the year, so you establish domicile. In other words, you can legally be part of New Hampshire. You can vote in New Hampshire, even though you're not legally a resident. I mean, that's the law in New Hampshire, and you don't have to get a New Hampshire driver's license to vote. Why has that simple reality not sunk into these fools?
Well, it's because, I hate to say it, Tom, they're not really fools. They're wise fools. They know exactly what they're doing, which is to create a hysteria that we need all kinds of rules. For example, once again, we go back to a system called cross-check. Because what New Hampshire is saying, what Kobach and the so-called Democrat, by the way, the League of Women Voters said, he's not a Democrat, but League, or as Chris Kobach calls them, the Communist League of Women Voters. I can't make that up. That's what he calls them all the time, Communist League. So Gardner and Kobach in this, and remember, this is Trump's commission. So this is going to affect voting systems nationwide if they get what they want. They are saying that people are voting not only in New Hampshire illegally, but New Hampshire and Massachusetts. And the way that you find that is by using the system called cross-check, which Kobach has come up and said, oh my God, people are registered in two states. Obviously, there are double voters. We have this big crime wave. There's two things. If you were a Massachusetts resident and driver, and then you went to school in New Hampshire, and you just kept your old license, you're not voting in two states. They don't have a single case of that. They've made the accusation, by the way. Kobach has listed tens of thousands of people in Massachusetts and New Hampshire who are supposedly double voters or double registered illegally. He hasn't arrested one, nor his buddy Gardner has not arrested one. You then go to school in New Hampshire. You are now a New Hampshire resident, or as you say, the technical word is domicile. You're supposed to vote in New Hampshire, and you don't have to change your driver's license. I can tell you, I know someone in the same situation, my daughter, who is domiciled in one state but kept her New York driver's license because she doesn't drive in the state where she goes to school.
Yeah.
You know, it's very common. So they're using obvious situations. And again, if there are illegal voters, bust them. In fact, give me the names. I will go and arrest them. I got their cross checklist, the Massachusetts, New Hampshire crosses. I don't see a single illegal voter. I have the names. I've contacted people. This is all ridiculous. They're students or people who've moved and haven't changed their driver's license. It doesn't matter. And once again, they're not busting people because the crime doesn't exist. The whole crowd, his whole little cabal, and of course the other business that they're talking about is that illegal aliens, Tom, are voting in our elections. You know, so and
Greg,
that, we know what that's heading.
Isn't this really an attempt to simply take us back to that era from the mid 1860s or early 1870s? Actually, I'd say the mid 1870s. You know, the beginning of the death of Reconstruction. Through really 1965. You know, to the Voting Rights Act, where in southern states they'd say, well, you know, we got these people down here who aren't all that smart, so we got to give them a literacy test, and we got people down here who, you know, they really don't know how the economy works. They don't make any money, so we got to charge them a poll tax to make sure that they can vote. To prove that they're upstanding citizens, and all these other BS excuses that they put out for years and years to block the vote of basically a people of color.
Well, what you're bringing up, of course, is all the Jim Crow era laws. A lot of people misunderstand American history. When Martin Luther King was marching from Selma to Montgomery to demand the Voting Rights Act, black people, there's no law on the books that said black people can't vote. People misunderstand that. It was just this same kind of game that you had to have all kinds of to prevent vote fraud. The Ku Klux Klan, and I kid you not, the Ku Klux Klan wrote laws that made sure that they would block black people and poor people, which, by the way, is Catholics at that time that they were going after. there's no law in the books that said black people, Catholics can't vote or poor people can't vote. What it was a series of rules to try to prevent so-called vote fraud. That, so you got your history right. And so we're now going back into that dark Jim Crow history, except instead of, using white sheets to scare away voters, they're using spreadsheets created by Kris Kobach, the chairman of this commission. He's also Secretary of State of Kansas. And, once again, in fact, it was Kobach himself, and Kobach's called me. I've spoken to him. If you look at my film, I jump him.
Yeah,
when he tries to get away from me.
Brilliant piece. And by the way, just I should have mentioned that when I introduced you. You're the author and filmmaker of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, which is an absolutely mind-bogglingly brilliant movie that you need to have to see. You have to see it, and you have to show it to all your friends. And you can watch it on Amazon for $3, and it's brilliant.
Well, I'm going to save you $3. Let me save you $3 because in 2 weeks you're going to have the new version out, which you can get from the gregpalace.com. Let me mention, though, that, yesterday I'm very, very concerned about this claim that non-citizens are voting. Kris Kobach himself says it's very, very easy to find these people and to bust them, yet he has not busted them. By the way, as the Secretary of State of Kansas, he has the legal authority to make arrests. He's failed to do so. And same with this guy, Gardner, and same, he has a guy named Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation on his panel, on the Trump election integrity panel.
Hans is like voter suppression, central. I mean, he's been on this beat for years.
Well, again, he said that the Heritage Foundation has 1,100 specific cases of voter fraud. I've actually looked at the Heritage site. sorry, it ain't there. They have a list of claims that were made, and we don't have any busts. So, you know, and there, yes, there have been about, as the ACLU points out, more people serve on the commission than have been arrested and convicted of vote fraud in America.
Absolutely amazing. Greg Palast, investigative journalist, Truth Out, Rolling Stone, author and filmmaker, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Check out gregpalast.com, particularly 2 weeks from now when the new version comes out. You can tweet him at Greg Palast, at Greg underscore Palast, excuse me. Greg, thank you so much.
You're the man.
Great talking with you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Stick around. We've got breaking Ted Cruz news right after this. And welcome back. Let's see here. Ed, watching Free Speech TV in Saginaw, Michigan. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I was just wondering. They're talking about putting sanctions on China and stuff and all that. What about all the money we owe China? What can China do about that?
We don't owe China any money at all, to the best of my knowledge.
We don't?
No, are you talking about their purchasing U.S. treasuries?
Huh?
Are you talking about China purchasing U.S. treasuries?
Yeah, China. Yeah, we borrowed money to get. Yeah.
Well, it's not that we borrowed money. It's that we sold them an investment. You know that. You know, so their money is now, you know, helping support our country. But the fact of the matter is, the U.S. treasuries. You know, right now treasuries are selling. You know, they're returning around a yield of around 2%, and which means that there's more demand for them than there is supply of them. The safest place in the world where people can put their money is in U.S. treasuries. And so China has bought about $1 trillion worth of U.S. treasuries, and, you know, they're sitting on them. It's a good investment. If they were to decide to sell those treasuries, they would have no problem doing that. There's plenty of people out there who want to buy them, and it wouldn't affect us at all.
So you mean I can buy treasuries too, then?
Yes, you can. I can. George W. Bush was born with $1 million in treasuries in his trust fund. I mean, you know, wealthy people buy treasuries like, you know, like there's nothing else out there. Because, you know, the federal government, the U.S. government, in its 240-year history, has never, ever defaulted. And so if you've got money that you want to protect and you want to have a small level of interest on it, you'll make 2% a year on it right now. But you can buy treasury bills and you can make that 2%, and it's absolutely guaranteed and it's totally solid. Ed, thank you for the call. But here's the catch. Here's the kicker. You've got our national debt is supposedly $20 trillion. You know, $2.65 trillion of that is the Social Security Trust Fund. Another trillion of that roughly is other internal funds where the government owes money to itself, essentially. Part of it is held by the Fed. So, you know, let's say for purposes of discussion, you know, it's around $16 trillion that is actually the so-called debt of the United States. What that actually means is that the federal government of the United States is offering savings accounts, just like banks do, that pay 2%, which, by the way, is better than you can get from a bank right now. And so you can put your money with the federal government and you can make the 2%. Now, the banksters on Wall Street are looking at this going, holy cow, if we could get $16 trillion deposited in Chase and Citibank and Bank of America and HSBC and whatnot, if we could shut down that government banking program, essentially, that government savings program, known as the national debt, if we could shut that thing down, we could force all those people to put that $16 trillion in our bank. And we could charge them fees, and we can skim money off the top, and we can make a huge profit, and we can pay, you know, this is the whole game. And, you know, Wall Street bankers like Pete Peterson, the Pete Peterson Institute, and others, there's a bunch of Wall Street bankers that literally since the 1950s have been trying to get the federal government out of the savings business. Now, we did this once before in the United States in the 1830s. I think it was 1832. I could be wrong, but in any case, President Andrew Jackson paid off the national debt. Suddenly, there was no safe place to keep your money. And what happened was we went into the longest and deepest Great Depression in the history of the United States. Don't buy their nonsense. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, I promised you breaking Ted Cruz news. This, of course, slightly tongue-in-cheek, because it's from our old friend Andy Borowitz, who years ago gave us permission to share his stories with you. This is in the New Yorker today. And I'll just read it straight, because it's just so great. This is Dateline Washington. The Borowitz report. The pornography industry has likely suffered permanent damage as a result of its unfortunate association with the Texas Senator Ted Cruz, industry sources said on Tuesday. Porn, which takes in annual profits of $15 billion, could see those revenues decimated if, as some industry experts fear, users begin to have intrusive thoughts involving Senator Cruz. Harlan Doranson, an industry insider, said, for porn producers, this is a crisis with no simple solution. If you warn viewers not to think about Ted Cruz, there's a real danger that that's all they'll think about. In the hours since porn first became associated with the Texas senator, traffic to porn sites has plummeted in what industry sources are ruefully calling the Cruz effect. Davis Longston, a porn user from Minnesota, said, I've enjoyed porn for years and never dreamed that anything could ruin the experience for me. Thanks a lot, Ted Cruz. Yeah. Okay, that's, you know, what can you say? The one thing Ted Cruz has not said so far is that he's not the guy who liked that porn clip, to the best of my knowledge. I may be wrong on this, but, you know, I've seen two clips of him talking about this and ain't happening. Okay, a bunch of other stuff in the news that I wanted to share with you today. This, we've talked about the stock market and the economy and how they're two different things and what an economy really means, why we have an economy, in fact. I mean, this is a business, for example, this radio show. We incorporated, it's a business. Why does a government let people incorporate? And why does a government give all kinds of benefits to people who own businesses? Why is it that I can have lunch and write it off, as long as I talk about business, even in a relatively marginal fashion? I can have lunch and write it off, in other words, have you pay for it, but Troy can't. Who works for me, who's our producer, or Nate, for that matter. The reason why is because the thinking was business needs to serve society. And in exchange for serving society, we're going to give business some benefits, right? We're going to give them some protections. You know, you have protection against liability. That's why limited liability corporation, LLC, or incorporation, just a, you know, basic corporation. You have the ability to basically form a union. It's called a corporation. It's you get a bunch of people together and start a business. Or you can do sole proprietorships and things like that. But business has gone completely nuts in the last 40 years since Reaganism. Reagan basically, quote, unleashed business. Well, what has happened is, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, those four decades, every single one of those four decades, we had GDP growth more than 3%. In the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and now the 20-teens, we are below 3% every single decade. So ever since Reaganism kicked in, our economy has gotten sluggish. Our middle class is sliding. And, of course, the rich are getting richer. But the bottom line is what's happening with businesses in America. And businesses, particularly big businesses, which are badly distorting our economy because of all this monopolization that's going on. Basically, every industry in America has now become vertically integrated and has become consolidated. So you've got four or five airlines, you've got four or five major food companies, you got four or five internet companies, you got four or five television networks, you got three companies that own the majority of radio stations in this country, you got a couple of companies that own the major newspapers, you've got hotel chains all across the country. It used to be you could drive into any city in America and know where you were because there would be local hotels with the name of the town on it. No more. Right. So this is screwing things up badly. And now here we are with this piece in the Financial Times today. The headline, Wall Street Titans Grow Wary of Aging Rally in U.S. Stocks. Again, keep in mind, the stock market is not the economy. The fund managers are hoarding cash, writes Robin Wigglesworth and Nicole Bullock in New York, are hoarding cash and buying protection against turbulence despite the S&P 500 rally this week, becoming the second strongest bull run in U.S. history. There's a serious lack of volatility, which has got people really concerned. Typically, in a year, you get four or five major corrections in a market. We haven't had one this year. The S&P 500 on Monday, quoting from the article in the Financial Times, the S&P 500 on Monday surpassed the record high last touched in early August and overtook the 1949 to 1956 rally to become the second strongest cyclical bull market in history. We're talking all the way back to George Washington, up almost 268%. Now, if that is not a bubble, I don't know what a bubble is. Anyhow, we'll be right back. Stick with me.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
More of the news of the day, your calls, and my thoughts on all of the above right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. In other news of the day, let me a couple things here to share with you and riff on. Bernie sent out an email this morning. And being on his mailing list, as I know many of you are as well, this from info@BernieSanders.com. Thomas, I have some important news to share with you. You can kind of imagine him. Today, along with 15 co-sponsors, I'm officially introducing our Medicare for All single-payer healthcare legislation that will guarantee healthcare as a right for every single man, woman, and child in the United States of America. He said, the last time I introduced this bill, it lacked even one single co-sponsor. Today we have 15. There are 16 senators, 16 Democratic senators. Well, actually one independent, Bernie, and 15 Democrats who are signed on to this thing. And they are Senator, and this is alphabetical, Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, Senator Richard Blumenthal. These are the people, these are the good guys. They signed on to this bill. If you're going to call their office and thank them, it would be a really great idea. Tweet them, say something on their Facebook page, whatever. Give them some credit, these people. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin, Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, Senator Al Franken of Minnesota, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, Senator Kamala Harris of California, Senator Martin Heinrich of New Mexico, Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii, Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico, Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, and Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island. And then Bernie says, but it gets better. Over the past 2 months, more than 500,000 people across the country have joined them as citizen co-sponsors of the bill. And in the House of Representatives, for the first time ever, a majority of the Democratic members have signed on to John Conyers' Medicare for All legislation. Because the truth is, Bernie writes, the insurance companies and drug companies in this country are extraordinarily powerful, and they are not going to go down without a fight. They have obscene amounts of wealth and have used that money to protect a dysfunctional system that allows them to make billions in profits while leaving far too many Americans behind. But in my view, the people of this country have had enough of the greed and recklessness of these industries, writes Bernie Sanders. We understand that it is a moral outrage that the United States is the only nation in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care as a right to all of its people. We believe that it's a national emergency, that 28 million of our sisters and brothers lack health care coverage, and that many more are underinsured with high deductibles and copayments. We are tired of going to the pharmacy to get medicine we need, and the price triples for no other reason than because the drug companies now have the right to charge whatever they like. Unbelievably, one out of five adults under 65 one out of five adults in this country who gets a prescription from a doctor cannot afford to get it filled. In my view, Bernie writes, the function of a rational healthcare system in this country should be to provide quality healthcare to everyone in a cost-effective way, not to make the health industry CEOs richer or drive up stock prices on Wall Street. And then he ends up by saying, this is the political revolution. And it really is. I mean, this is something that was unimaginable just 2 years ago. Unimaginable. You'll recall, you know, the Chuck Grassley, you know, who's the guy who was the running mate for Al Gore? Joe Lieberman. Thank you. Damn, I hate it when that happens. Joe Lieberman. They killed the public option. I mean, it wasn't even that they didn't want single payer. They didn't even want you to have the ability to buy into Medicare. And these are Democrats. Well, Joe Lieberman, I don't know, you know, whatever. So there's that. Meanwhile, Randall Quarles. No, I'm not talking about the verb Quarles. I'm talking about the proper noun. It's his last name, Quarles. Randall Quarles. This an email that I got from Credo Action. the Credo Action Fund, and they're quoting Senator Elizabeth Warren. They write, Randall Quarles has spent 30 years spinning in the revolving door between Washington and Wall Street. He helped create too-big-to-fail banks and personally profited from the bailouts, and now he wants to slash banking rules. Elizabeth Warren called him dangerous. Now, you look at somebody who has basically, you know, made their fortune like this and running banks and all, and you think, what's the worst thing Donald Trump could do with this guy? He's putting him in charge of regulating the banks. Seriously. Or he wants to. And he actually has a couple of Democrats, Mark Warner, Heidi Heitkamp, and Chris Van Hollen, who are supporting this. You might want to let them know if you disagree with that. This is what Senator Elizabeth Warren said, quote, you've got 15 years representing big banks. She was talking to him in an open congressional session. You've got 15 years representing big banks at a New York law firm, working on some of the mergers that created the too-big-to-fail banks that we have today. You have two stints at the Treasury Department, including shortly before the 2008 crisis, where you insisted the banks were well-capitalized enough to survive a housing downturn. And more than a decade in private equity and investment management, where you've argued repeatedly for weaker rules for the biggest banks. That is not a track record that should give Americans a whole lot of confidence in you. And boy, can I say amen to that. Anyhow, we've got a bunch of other stuff to get to as we go through the program, but let's pick up some calls here. Beverly in McHenry, Illinois. Hey, Beverly, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was hoping that maybe Bernie, if you have a connection to get to him and all these other senators and people on TV, what about marketing Medicare for All or single payer in an economic perspective? Talk about how we could save businesses. They have an unfair advantage in the United States in which they have to cover that as a benefit. Besides a big company, they have tons of people in their human resource department negotiating, monitoring, administrating. All of that money could be saved by a single payer. Then maybe these companies can pay their people more or give them a different benefit.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with you. I've got a little piece of paper around here someplace. Here it is. It migrated around my desk that Chris put together actually a week or so ago. This is 2010 numbers, the last numbers that we had that were like, you know, for sure and real and all that kind of thing. And the United States, we pay $8,233 per person for health care. In Norway, it's 5,000. Norway is the most expensive country in the world. Outside of the United States. In Norway, it's $5,388. In Switzerland, it's $5,270. In the UK, it's $3,400 per person. We're spending $8,200 per person. Why? So Stephen Jay Hemsley can get another $1 billion. Pure and simple. It's just for the fat cats, these bankers who call themselves insurance companies. Insurance companies do not, health insurance companies do not provide vaccinations to children. They do not diagnose cancer. They do not do surgery. They do not, all they do is move money. They're bankers. And we really need to acknowledge that. Harrison in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Harrison, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I'm out here in Washington, and unfortunately, Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell haven't jumped on the Medicare for All. I'm kind of wondering why.
Oh, give them time.
I get up this morning to read the Seattle Times, and the lead article is Patty Murray is working with Lamar Alexander.
Harrison, your phone is going nuts. I can't quite understand you. Say it again.
The Seattle Times this morning had the lead story of my senator, Patty Murray, teaming up with Lamar Alexander to quote-unquote fix.
Oh, there it goes again. Harrison, I'm sorry, your phone is just not working. You're going to have to call back another time when you got a phone that works. Marta in Big Bear Lake, California. Hey, Marta, what's up?
Well, I have a question and then what I think might be an answer.
Okay, we have 1 minute, Marta. Please, quickly.
I think you'll agree. What do Americans want, divisiveness or solutions? I think people are tired of divisiveness. My question is, what does it mean to be a progressive? And I think that means be forward-looking and find solutions.
Well, I would summarize in two words, people first.
Right. And so what is it going to take to win elections? George Lakoff told us, and I think we should listen, build on values. So my new motto and what I've learned from you is, what do Americans agree on? So my new motto is, most Americans agree. And you've gone over the list of what most Americans agree on, but you always say it really, really fast. And I think we need to know and think about, what do Americans agree on? George Lakoff said, build on values, and that is going to build bridges and help us to find out we do agree on values.
Yeah. And well, I've got the poll of likely 2016 voters from the Progressive Change Institute. This was a national poll, and 67% think that the government should negotiate drug prices. 68% think that, 77%, universal pre-kindergarten, 75% fair trade that protects workers, 74% end tax loopholes for corporations that ship jobs overseas. Then it goes on and on from there. Marta, thank
you. You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls and the news of the day right after. And welcome back. Barbara, watching Free Speech TV in Squim, Washington. Hey, Barbara, what's up?
Taking you off speaker, Tom. A long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, Barbara.
I was calling about this article in the Washington Post by Aaron Blake, I think, apropos to your topic about single-payer health care. Mm-hmm. She's really ripping into Bernie's plan and revisiting the 2016 election and how he was against her and why it was one of the big reasons that she lost. Anyway, I don't think it's very helpful to try to unite the Democratic Party to have this animus between the progressives and the traditional Democrats. I'm a PCO here in Squim.
If I may, Barbara, traditional Democrats, FDR Democrats, are progressives.
No, you're right. I stand corrected. I think you mean
the corporate Democrats.
Yeah, I do. They think they're the traditional.
Well, they try to claim that label, and they have since Al Fromm invented the DLC in 89, I think it was. But that is not the Democratic Party that I grew up with or that my parents grew up with.
Nor me. Now, like I say, I'm a PCO, and there is so much infighting.
What's a PCO? Oh, precinct party. Committee officer, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. And I just did that last year just because you said get active, get involved.
Good on you, Barbara.
But it's very disheartening because we can't even agree in this little place where I live to get a good platform going. There's constant infighting between the progressives and the corporate. So
yeah.
I just was going to say that, I wish we would just get it together so we can do something in 2018 and 2020 and beyond.
It takes time to move a large organization. You know, it's like moving a ship. You know, the rudder turns and, you know, 3 hours later, the ship has moved, you know, a couple miles off course or on course or whatever it may be. It just takes time. And it has taken 20 years for the Democratic Party, a little more than 20 years. Yeah.
That you're hopeful. So many of my friends, I'm 77, are just kind of throwing up their hands and saying, I'm glad we're on our way out. And
that's a terrible way to look at it, Barbara. I'm so glad that you're getting active.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it is great. Barbara, thank you so much. It's great to hear from you. It takes a while for these things to happen. And, you know, but that's the kind of the bad news, as it were. But the good news is Bernie just introduced a bill of single payer health care, and he has 15 sponsors. 16 senators are in favor of single payer health care. And Mark Pocan was talking, you know, in the first hour of our program about how 160 members of the House of Representatives, not including people who are not even members of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, 160 members in the House have signed on to John Conyers, H.R. 676, for single payer health care. I mean, this is serious stuff. This party is changing back to its pre-1990 core right in front of our eyes. Just consider where the Republican Party was, for example, in 1956, when Dwight Eisenhower ran for re-election on a platform of having added over a million people to the Social Security rolls and over 2 million people to the union roll. That was what he campaigned on. That was the Republican Party. I mean, look at how much both of these parties have changed over the years. I would love to see the Republican Party go back to its Eisenhower roots, back to rationality, kick out the billionaires. And I would sure love to see the Democratic Party go back to the FDR. We'll be back. Hang on just a second. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Radio News, Talk Media News, excuse me, find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do, and goatsfortheoldgoat.com, Ellen's brilliant charity that is helping serve some really, really distressed people in South Sudan, where Ellen and I have been, in fact. Ellen, welcome to the program.
We certainly have been. So, Bernie Sanders, in about 10 minutes from when I'm on the air with you right now, is going to be unveiling his legislation for Medicare for All. Now, it's very interesting. He's getting support now from people who we think might be running for president. So Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren.
Kamala Harris.
That's right. They're all in this big time. However, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are not necessarily behind this. And, of course, today the Republicans also released their big health care plan, which is to give block grants to the states.
So that the states can cut people off their health insurance.
Well, of course, you and I know that.
Yeah. Well, history shows that. I mean, you know, this was, you know, Clinton's great, welfare reform was block granting welfare. And what did the states do? They just chopped it all up.
That's exactly what they'll do on this one. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. The Republican plan this morning was unveiled by Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy of Louisiana.
Yeah. Okay, great. What else is up?
Okay, Hillary Clinton gave her first interview since losing the election. She gave it on NBC this morning to help for publicity for her book, What Happened. But she said, interesting, that Donald Trump Jr. had, as you know, meetings with a Russian, and she says, it's ridiculous, it's another absurd lie to cover up what was really going on, which I hope we will finally uncover and understand. So she's still fighting, boy.
Yeah, well, I hope so, too.
Okay, so the judicial nomination of Judge, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, Strass, he is an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court in Minnesota, and normally, in order to get a justice nomination through, both senators in the state where the judicial nominee is from have to give their approval. Well, Al Franken has not done this, and a right-wing judicial...
This is called blue slipping, by the way.
It is called blue slipping. There's two different kinds of blue slipping. One is in the House, and it has nothing to do with nominations. But this is Franken's blue slip, and he's not doing it. And so the Judicial Crisis Network, which is a right-wing group, said that they are going to make ads all across the state of Minnesota against Al Franken because he is against this justice.
Surprise, surprise. I mean, they're going to do that when he's running for re-election, too. They're going to come after him with
now they're doing
guns
it
blazing.
Now.
Yeah, yeah. I know Al. I doubt he's very worried about this. But who knows?
Well, you never can tell, right? Yeah. And it depends how much money they spend too.
Yeah, yeah.
And what the ads say, which we have not yet seen.
Yep.
Okay, so now Donald Trump has made his big reaches into the Democratic Party. He invited three red state senators to discuss his tax plan yesterday, which, of course, we have not seen, so we can't really comment on it because they have not released the legislation. And then today, just in the last hour or so, the White House updated what's called the President's Day, and he is going to be having dinner with House and Senate minority leaders at 7 p.m. Originally, it was listed as a bipartisan dinner, but now it's House and Senate minority leaders.
Hmm. So what does this mean?
He's clearly trying to pick off some of the Democrats.
I see. Yeah. Especially those in states that he won by a big margin.
Right. Well, the red states and where people might be up for re-election.
Right.
Okay, I have some hurricane updates for you.
Okay.
25% of the homes in the Florida Keys are destroyed. 90% are damaged. Then Marriott Hotels sent a boat to take people from St. John's, which is an American protectorate, to Puerto Rico. But they would not let non-Marriott guests on the boat, despite the fact that there was plenty of room.
Yeah, I saw that story in the New York Times. It's pretty grim.
It is pretty grim. And, of course, Marriott is trying to sort of make up for it somehow by saying this was just, you know, the way they do things or whatever, but nobody's...
I'm surprised they're not saying the captain acted without authorization. Are they saying that this was actually Marriott policy?
They said that this was the Marriott instructions that they gave.
Whoa.
Exactly what they're saying.
Amazing.
Okay. The Broward County mayor said that now six people, it was five just a while ago, but six people have now died in the nursing home in Hollywood Hills. They didn't have electricity, so they didn't have air conditioning. A few of them have been taken to the hospital, so we don't know. The death rate may go up as more. And the Florida Division of Emergency Management has put out a map of outages. You can look it up. Just look it under Florida Division of Emergency Management. And the Miami Beach mayor says he is working with the Florida Power and Light to get electricity restored. Some places, they say, it may not be restored for 10 days.
Wow. It's going to be a tough one. You know, if in the restoration, in the rebuilding process, if they put solar panels on everybody's roof, they'd never have this problem again.
Right. Well, of course, then you might not have roofs anymore. So that's another...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that you rebuild with concrete and, you know, you make it stormproof, but...
Well, you know, what's interesting...
My point was you can have your own electricity.
As you know, I was involved in Hurricane Katrina, and when we built our community center, I mean, there could be a Category 7, even though I don't think there is such a thing, storm, and it would not disturb what we did in Mississippi.
Yeah.
Because we built it so that it was very hurricane-proof.
Yep.
Okay, now it's interesting. 5 years after Hurricane Sandy, homeowners are having a press conference on Capitol Hill. They say they have not been paid all the money, even though they bought policies. Now, what's really interesting, and this is what I don't know, and unfortunately I didn't go to the presser because I'm here today with you, but what we do know is that if you have flood insurance, it does not necessarily mean you have mold insurance.
Oh, no. So the insurance companies are ripping off homeowners. I mean, A, what a surprise. It's an insurance company. They're banker parasites. But B, oh, that's just terrible. That's just terrible. Ellen Ratner.
Yes.
Ellen, thanks so much for being with us. Talk Media News. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.